Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It's one thing to be accused of one of the most brutal mass killings in recent memory. It's another to possibly sabotage your own defense from the inside out, maybe even with the help of mom. Today, we are diving into the psychological and behavioral puzzle that is Brian Koberger, from refusing to give his lawyers an alibi to possibly letting his mother's loyalty override legal logic. The case is turning into a masterclass in self-defeating behavior, or something even more complex. Joining us, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. The guy who's, written many books on these sort of topics, on behavior, how to decode human behavior and motives. Robin, from a behavioral analyst standpoint, when you see a defendant refusing to cooperate with their own defense team, at least that's maybe the assumption off the record. It's no officially thing that there's no official reports that he is, but under the influence maybe of a loved one, as we've heard from reporting of Howard Blum. What does that signal to you? Is it defiance, denial, or something deeper rooted in their personality than their pathology?
You know, I think when it comes to Koberger, from what we've seen, what we've been studying about him for quite a while now, it's just he has this mindset of he's not wrong. He's done the research. He's done all the background. If it is him, he did all the planning. So he can't be wrong. Matter of fact, I still think that's why he didn't really have an accurate, if it's him, he's innocent until proven guilty, that he didn't have plan B or C because he did not anticipate plan A going wrong. I just think he's dug in on who he is and how to do things.
And it's interesting because what Howard is reporting, he's wrote that book, The Night,
When Night Comes Calling.
When the Night Comes Calling. A great reporter, very in-depth. So when he's saying something out loud, you pay attention because he's not a one that's out to get clicks. He's saying it because it means something. And his reporting is essentially saying that Koberger's mom is continuing to encourage him to go down the path of where he's been going, not guilty, despite how maybe the walls are closing in. He is reporting and I think suspecting that, maybe Ann Taylor has at some point gone to Koberger and said, this isn't looking good. We may need to figure out our strategy here. And it may be more so saving your life than it is getting a not guilty verdict. Again, all speculation, and it's based on the reporting of Howard. Mom's sitting there and saying, she doesn't believe he's guilty. I get it. If you're a parent, it'd be very hard to wrap your mind around that. Yep. It doesn't make her a bad person or anything, but if she really believes her son is innocent, of course she's going to be pushing him to keep fighting for not guilty. How do you think that would affect somebody like a Koberger? He's still going down the not guilty path, but do you think it's something he's contemplating behind the scenes, or with the support of mom, does it make it something that he wouldn't consider?
I don't know the influence of his parents in his life with his decision-making process. That's what the unknown here is. Her behavior makes complete sense. I actually looked up the stats on this because I was curious about this. And it's around 30 to 60% of parents of juvenile offenders, and he was obviously older than a juvenile, but he's in that bracket potentially. So 30 to 60% of parents offenders show denial or minimization of their kids' involvement in delinquent acts. And it's just on delinquent acts, not even in murderous acts. So that's a high number. And then even from the 2019 Journal of Family Psychology found that roughly 40% of parents with juvenile detention downplayed or rejected a child's responsibility for that. So it's not incongruent with what parents, especially if your son's being potentially put on death row, would do. But again, it goes back towards, I'm always thinking of what's he seeing, like with Ann Taylor, you know, because remember, if he's not taking input and data from her or mm-hmm. shifting his mindset, what's the likelihood he's going to take it from his parents as well?
Yeah.
That don't know, because don't you just get the sense? I mean, I get the sense that he's probably sharing more of what actually happened with Ann Taylor than he probably would be with mother and dad. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, he can only share so much with Ann, too. He can't be like, I killed him, and now we need to find a story for this. I mean,
I also remember we said this before, too, you know, talking about not, you know, being resistant to her, of giving her an alibi or something. I don't think he had one planned.
No.
He wasn't planning on failure.
Is that surprising, though? I mean, if you're this, you know, he thinks he's so smart about this. Even if you know you're smart at something and you know you can put together the pieces of this and execute it pretty well, why wouldn't you at the very least have some sort of backup plan or something in case the police come calling or you get questioned?
I really don't, from everything we're, again, yeah. I'm not basing on mine off of, you know, thinking he didn't. From what we're seeing, from what we know from the evidence we have and how thorough he was, mm-hmm. I mean, I've never seen a case that was so thorough.
Yeah.
With everything he had done, with the exception of the touch DNA on the knife sheath. Mm-hmm. I mean, he makes one very, very small boo-boo. Now, granted, he left the knife sheath behind, that's the boo-boo.
Yeah.
But just the touch DNA. But again, no blood splatter, mm-hmm. nothing in the vehicle, nothing anywhere. But there's zero evidence that he actually did something with the foresight of possibly getting caught. In other words, mm-hmm. he did not like the simple thing of going out at night, you know, that whole stargazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
If that was actually a planned alibi, he should have been doing that more than just one night. He should have been able to draw on data from, hey, for the last 6 months, here's something I got into. Here's a hobby I have. In other words, mm-hmm. he didn't plan on an alibi. He doesn't have friends or contacts much, so he couldn't really use that. So he's going to have to use events, times, and places as an alibi, and he didn't plan for it. So yeah. When you don't plan for something, in my mind, it says that you were not planning on failing.
He also didn't plan for some obvious things, like the cell phone data showing where he's at, and driving around the house on a lot of occasions. That all, is that just inexperience? Is yes. that okay? Yeah, that
I still think it's he studied well mm-hmm. for a high. As I've said before, he studied well for a high school final exam mm-hmm. in how to commit a serial murder. Killing.
Based on data that I think was outdated.
Yes, the problem is he's actually taken an exam at the PhD level.
Yeah.
His professors were PhDs in this because they actually had life reps and maturity and experience and wisdom from academic side as mm-hmm. well as experience side. And so they were examining him as a PhD candidate, not as a high schooler.
Mm-hmm.
That's my analogy. I keep going in my head. So he thought he was going to ace this high school test on how to commit a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Problem was his instructors had PhDs.
Yeah. I just from the report that he did, I read through it the other day on the camera. I mean, it was boring as hell, but I mean, it's not supposed to be exciting, but it felt outdated as well. Like to some mm-hmm. of the methodology in there yep. was like, I mean, this seems like this, you know, would have been applicable in the 90s or early 2000s. It didn't really touch on newer technology or things to consider or what to, you know, exactly that, what to consider when investigating or if you're planning the crime. There was a lot of pieces that were not in there. So it seems like he would have done really good at this had it been 10 years earlier or 15 years earlier. But there wasn't a lot of consideration for, I guess, more current ways that crimes can be solved.
You know, it'd be really interesting in the case if it comes out and also its absence of it will also be indicative, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's known to be a PhD student. It would really be interesting if we find out what he studied, what cases he studied, because if what you would expect to see from someone who's trying to pull off the perfect crime, I want to see podcasts he listens to on true crime like ours or anything yeah. or like what are current cases that are like, was he following Delphi? Was he following Alec Murdoch case? Mm-hmm. Was he following, you know, Lori Daybell Vallow and those nutters? I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of cases, not just those ones that we cover, but there's a lot of cases that are within the last year of him doing this that I would have covered, that I would have been focusing on, this, to look at how law enforcement does what they do, and even the Rex Heuermann case, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, from the differences between when he started, you know, in the Long Island murders to where law enforcement investigations are now, what has changed over a period of time? I haven't seen any data, and maybe we'll see an investigation, I mean, in the prosecution and the case, about what he studied in the original cases to what's different now in investigative strategies, tools, techniques, and forensics.
One thing, or one person that we know he did study, and there are some similarities, BTK, yep. He studied under Catherine Ramsland. Yep. Who, you know, wrote the big book on BTK, had all those interviews with him. She's been on the show, but she can't talk about Koberger. So there was some of that. I mean, and if you look at...
How old's BTK?
The case? Well, I mean, he was arrested about 15, 20 years ago, roughly. But there's always been kind of ongoing things with the case. Like last year, we were talking early on about somebody went to the Park City house and they dug it up. Like, the house is gone, but they dug up where his shed was. And that sheriff in Oklahoma claims he found, you know,
bras or something. Right?
Or like panties. And then he's playing with them on camera with Ashley on... It's on News Nation. It's like, what are you doing? So they're always, was still kind of lingering out there. It still is kind of lingering out there. But what BTK did was he screwed with the public and he screwed with the police for a long period of time by putting ads out there in the newspaper, the Wichita Eagle. And that's eventually what got him caught. He was so stupid. He said, can you track me from a floppy disk? And of course they said no. But yes, of course you can see where that disk came from if you look at the metadata. So then that's how he ended up getting busted. Koberger, I mean, if that Papa Roger is him, which I would be shocked to death if it is not, considering just how similar he looks to that character and that screenshot, that image, and the inside knowledge that he has, I don't know how that could not possibly be him. So that would be a lot of evidence kind of mimicking BTK in a sort of way. It just kind of depends what else you look at here. That image, the headshot that he took in the bathroom, that also has a lot of weird tentacles to it that seem to point at others that maybe he looked up to, that maybe he had some sort of affinity to. Really means a lot other than it shows.
And look up, you know, and look up to is an interesting word phrase you just used too. So when you're dealing with, again, let's conjecture hat. No psychological testing we know, but when you're dealing with psychopathy and this type of thing, it's not that they look up to anyone. It's not how the brain works for them. It's more of a, what can I outdo them on?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't idolize anyone because they see themselves as the best. They see themselves as the most grandiose, that has the greatest skill set. So they're going to take the behaviors of people that have been successful and incorporate them and see if they can improve upon them. You know, it's interesting because we tend to put too much humanization behind the inhuman with true psychopaths, because there is no humanity in there whatsoever. That's devoid of it. They are empty shell predators. And so there's no idolization. There's mimicry. There's learning. I mean, it's like just think of a mother shark training a baby shark on how to kill something. Just watch and do better. That's it.
Sure.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.